You're listening to Magic From Wherever I'm At with your host, the magician, time traveler, and charmer, D'Artagnan.
All right, welcome to another edition of the podcast. I am D'Artagnan, and today, a new edition of the podcast. I want to start with something that happened to me really recently, which is kind of curious to me, and then we'll move on to something a little more of the normal variety. Now, recently, of course, throughout this entire pandemic, I have been street performing up until December before they blew up the downtown. Somebody blew up the downtown with a bomb, actually, or blew up right where I would perform. So since then, I've been on a hiatus. They've gotten that cleaned up. But now there's like a reopening of a lot of the businesses down there. And it's so packed. It's almost like the reverse. It's almost like there's so many people flooding downtown that it's like scary to be around that many people. And I had to be downtown a couple of Saturday nights ago. Yeah, to be around that many people again was like bizarre, first of all. And then it was just way too many people and nobody gave a shit. Those are, we're adding some Canadian flavor here with some official Canada geese. So I have not done any private performances. I'm trying to think back to last year. No, I've not done any private performances during the pandemic. Recently, somebody contacted me kind of out of the blue and was curious if I would entertain at their adult daughter's birthday party. And I said, yes, I would be available to do so. And usually I try to, I don't try to, but I think I, for the most part, dissuade all but the sharpest people, because I have found over time that the best clients for my private performances are people who have seen me perform already. And if they're just trying to hire a magician, that is something I don't want. It leads to all sorts of problems, all sorts of misconceptions. They have all these like ideas in their mind about what it is, and like most of my views are antithetical to all of that garbage. And so if they come, someone comes at me from out of the blue, what usually blows them out instantly are my fees, which are high in relation, I guess, to other performers. I don't know, but I charge a fair penny. And so that people who are looking for the generic magician, that usually just blows them away out of the water right away, because they're not that serious about having good entertainment. They just kind of want something, and it could be a face painting or a magician or a monkey clanging cymbals together. They don't really care. It's only the people who have seen me and want me individually, as we've talked about on this podcast before, that you really want to be in business with, because these people understand your value already. Emotionally, they already understand your value. And anyone who's read The Secret Gate knows the value of such things. So this person approaches me and I'm already skeptical because I don't know. They didn't fill out the form on my website and they kind of came out of the blue. But I'm like remaining open. I send my fees over and I don't really hear from them. And that is usually an indicator these people were like, whoa, that was way more than I was expecting. I'm out of here. We're going to go to Joe Blow, monkey cymbal crasher guy, who will do a few magic tricks too. And we'll pay $300 for a couple hours for him or whatever. But much to my surprise, about 5 days later, this lady, if it was a lady, responded with the fact that my fees were acceptable. And she explained more about how many people would be there, because I had also requested that information. She said there was going to be 150 people there. And she also said that the venue was at her home. Now, of course, there are people whose houses can accommodate 150 people. But that is an unusually high number, in my experience, for parties I've performed at. And that's a lot of people having a background in the nightclub industry and knowing what 150 people looks like in a room or on a patio, for example. That's a lot more people than you want to put into most people's houses by quite a bit. And so that sent a red flag up to me as well. The accepting of the fees was like, okay, maybe this person is serious. The 150 people in their house was kind of like, that seems weird to me. Put up a red flag. And then they had this special request. Now, I thought this special request was going to be some sort of like magical reveal, you know, much like a gender reveal party or somebody wanting to propose or a couple of these things that you get asked for over time as a magician. I thought that this would be of a similar ilk, that somebody would be asking me to magically reveal, make something appear, whether it's a, you know, a keys to a new car for graduation or who knows, right? But what came next, of course, outed them as a scammer at the same time, you know, revealing sort of this whole thing was a put on. And that was that they wanted to give me not only my fees, but also the entire fees for the party planner who was party setting up the entire thing, which were essentially, you know, double my fees, essentially is what it came out to. The party planner fees were a little less than what I'd asked for. So they wanted me to forward all that money to me. They wanted me to take the full payment and then pay the party planner out of, you know, his or her half out of that. Now, this is a pretty common, what they call a refund scam. And anyone who's watched any YouTube videos about scamming and stuff knows that this is yet another version of what is a very popular thing going around. Where people scam the elderly, right? They contact you with an email or some sort of call or robocall, and they suggest that you are owed a refund, a small refund. You've been overcharged or charged for something you didn't purchase, and they want to refund you what usually amounts to several $100s. So not a crazy amount of money. And then they get you on the phone. They ask you to call this number to get your refund. You get on the phone with these people, and what they end up doing is arranging a situation where in transferring over your refund, they quote unquote mistakenly transfer a huge sum of money into your account, which is all fakery. And then they plead for help from the victim, essentially, and want you to refund all that money that they mistakenly put over into your account, which usually amounts to tens of thousands of dollars. This is a very popular scam, and it nets a lot of people. It ensnares, I guess, a lot of people, a lot of elderly people, because they're not computer savvy, they're not scam savvy, obviously. People are trusting by and large. And if you go on YouTube, there's all sorts of YouTube channels dedicated to these kind of scams and uncovering them. And some YouTubers screwing with the scam artists, confronting them face to face, some of these money mules. And there's a whole thing. It's quite a fascinating world. All these scam call centers are essentially in overseas in India, place like India. And then they have cohorts in the United States and around the world, I imagine. To just do the legwork, the picking up of the FedEx boxes. They rent Airbnbs or hotel rooms or all sorts of stuff to have this stuff delivered to. But this, again, was another version that someone's trying to perpetrate on me. And I simply said, like, you just have to wire all that money into my bank account. I'll give you my bank account credentials for a wire to wire the money into. And, of course, they flatly refused, said they couldn't do that. Oh, I'm in the hospital or some shit. And then, which just out of the, because I knew they were a scammer, so they're never just going to wire any real money into your account. Well, we can only do it over this, that, and the other. And it's like, because it's complete bullshit. And so when I said, no, it's easy, you can just wire it into this account, I'll get you, just tell me where you're wiring it from and I'll connect it to my bank, whatever. And of course, they disappeared instantly and never heard from again. So that's something to watch out for now, because every time there is a, And we're in a period here where we're in a global pandemic. We seem to hopefully, given that people are now becoming vaccinated, will soon be shifting perhaps to a brighter day. But with every sort of big shift in how the world's working, and in this case, you know, everyone's been cooped up for a year, and people have been lost their jobs, and they would love extra money, and like all these things. So they're playing. A lot of these people, I'm sure, are playing right into the hands of unsuspecting scams, and it's really unfortunate because people would take advantage of anybody that way, even under the best of circumstances. But of course, now this is some of the worst of circumstances, where people are emotionally and psychologically fragile, in addition to financial fragility, uncertainty, and fear, and they're being preyed upon by all sorts of scam artists. And it's pretty weird for them to try and pull that on a magician. I don't know if they were just Googling around for people, or they're going, you know, maybe they finally hit M on the list or something to, oh, maybe magician, let's try to scam magicians next. Who knows? But it's something to look out for if you do accept outside, you know, if you do perform for a living, something to keep in mind. You know, the old adage, if it's too good to be true, it probably is, usually applies. So I'd be very careful of people trying to, in fact, my roommate back 10 years ago now almost fell victim to a similar scam because someone was trying to pay him to chauffeur them around. It was almost like the Nigerian email scam type, you know, we're trying to get money out of the country and we'll cut you in for a percentage if you help, you know, we can use your bank account to transfer the money out of Nigeria or whatever, which has been around for several decades now. This was a version of that where they were like coming overseas, they wanted someone to chauffeur them around, and my roommate, I don't know, it's like the Canadian version of Craigslist, got sucked into this, and again, they wanted to overpay him and then have him send them the balance, you know, the stuff, the over and above his, what he thought, you know, what they agreed to send it to this other person. And really none of the money existed. He was just going to end up paying out of his own pocket, you know, sending money to these people and getting nothing in return. And so my roommate at the time almost fell victim to that, and I had to dissuade him of that as well. So beware. With any sort of, you know, when there's disaster striking, there's also opportunity, and people of ne'er-do-wells jump on those opportunities. Now, the second sort of part of this podcast, I would like to talk about a book I finally dug into called The Practice by Seth Godin. I've read, if not all of Seth Godin's books, I think I've read probably 90% of them. This one I had not read. It came out in 2020, I believe. And it's really about shipping creative, you know, products, I guess. You know, getting your creative projects out the door. And it's a series of tidbits, little stories that sort of speak to this. Creativity, doing the work, very much a follow-on from Stephen Pressfield's ideas and so forth. And so in reading these short little missives on all aspects of this, I came across a number of things that reminded me of a few things. When I was first sort of mulling around the ideas that became The Secret Gate, if you've read the book, you'll see that one of the chapters was about marketing and advertising and how a similar idea that eventually became The Secret Gate, that sort of, you know, all culminated in the idea that became The Secret Gate, was represented not only in film and elsewhere, but in marketing and advertising. And I'd come across this idea in advertising in a very similar form. And it was right during that period that a friend of mine, another person interested in magic, and I had started talking about this and like how you put together a show. And I had suggested, because I'd gone to see him perform. I believe I talk about this in the book. I had gone to see him perform at this old folks' home. And then I'd asked him sort of facetiously a bit you know, why he'd put his show together in that way. And basically he'd said the sort of often trumpeted idea of like a strength of effect, you know, would be you'd start with the maybe a strong effect and then work your way from weakest to strongest, or start with the weakest, work to the strong, some variation of that. Now, of course, this person had really no presentations or anything either. So to base it on, you're basically, it was the strength of the method and your, and or his dexterity with the method is really what he's basing how he put his show together, which is a, you know, something you'll find in magic books and is not generally a good idea. It's just a wrong way to think about a show. And at the time, pulling together some of these ideas, I offered this idea from advertising, and I tried to explain this to him in terms of marketing, and I failed epically because he didn't really know anything about marketing, and I, you know, and it was hard to transfer it immediately into magic or give any good examples. And then we had gone and attempted to watch a few Penguin lectures for some effect. One of them was Jason Alexander, I remember, and one of them was a mentalist. What's his name? I'm going to forget. But a famous mentalist. Wasn't Darren Brown. It was somebody else. We'd watched their Penguin lectures in hopes that their shows would be structured in some way that would perhaps illustrate what I was talking about. And they weren't. They were basically illustrated the same way that my friend had done his show. Constructed in the same way. And so that didn't help at all, and those shows weren't very good. So, but one of the things that my friend sort of seemed to suffer from in terms of his inability to want to do anything like that, or and really in his approach to magic in general, I would say, I was reminded of when I was reading this Seth Godin book, because Seth Godin really talks about, in the book, he talks about fear and how people often have to have almost a paint by numbers from start to finish, or they won't be able to get started on anything. And that was exactly what my friend was sort of asking for. He wanted me to lay it all out in a sort of paint by numbers so he could sort of fill in the blanks. And that's really not how things occur. You got to take some chances. You got to put yourself on the line. You got to, it's really born out of a need and having something to say. It doesn't really come from like, well, here's how you do it. Okay, here. And the fact that my friend didn't have that, or I couldn't provide that to him, meant he couldn't do anything at all, basically. He couldn't even get started. He couldn't even conceive what anything would look like. And that was a real problem, because there are no guarantees when you start something creative that any of it is going to work and that it'll be a success or whatever. The gall or the arrogance or the confidence or whatever you want to call it to be like, you know, I'm going to make this thing. I've got a voice, something I want to express, and this is my chosen medium, which is magic. Right, we want to. We're going to use the medium of magic, not tricks, but magic, to communicate what it is we want to say. And I do have seen that repeated, not just with my friend, but in other people. That if they don't have this paint by number, if they don't have everything laid out where they can just fill in the blanks, they can't really get started, and they have no. They seem like they just get paralyzed by the unknown. And that's never good, because it means generally you'll never get started doing anything. And it's really unfortunate that that's the case, because it is just so paralyzing. And really what it is, when you have something to say, is you have something to share with people. So you're doing it for them as well as yourself, and really, really mostly for them probably. And like I said, there's just no guarantee. So in the sort of chapter 21 or example 21 that Seth Godin gives in his book, The Practice, The Work and the Guarantee, number 21 is the work and the guarantee. The practice has nothing at all to do with being sure the work is going to be successful. That's a trap. The guarantee requires industrial sameness. Recipes that have been tested, and most of all, the fungible labor of the disrespected laborer. If anyone can do it, we'll just hire anyone. And this really speaks to what I said earlier about people hiring me after they'd seen me versus people hiring just a generic magician. You never want to be hired just as the, we want a magician. It's just so shitty. Doing the work simply involves acknowledging that we're capable of caring enough to make the work better, to learn, to see, and improve. The search for a guarantee is endless, fruitless, and the end of possibility, not the beginning. In perhaps the most profound remark I can recall hearing from a member of Black Sabbath, drummer Bill Ward said this about their first hit. Quote, I thought the song would be a flop, but I also thought it was brilliant. So this really speaks to my friend. You know, that's really what he wanted. He wanted a guarantee that this is going to work and a paint-by-numbers system so he could fill in the blanks, so he could make sure he had everything in the right, quote-unquote, right order to be successful. And that's not an artist. And that will never be the case. And he says, as Seth Godin says here, that's a guarantee for industrial sameness. You're just going to be another cookie cutter. And that's the problem with magic. Everyone's just copying. And that's one of the problems with magic. And that's why you see everyone doing the same goddamn linking ring, or just a small variation, a very subtle variation of the same damn shit. And it's terrible. As an artist, if you're truly an artist, you have something to say. And then you find your own way of expressing that. And there are structures and tools you can use to do that, which will help you convey it with clarity. But you have to come up with how you're going to do it. Right? The beginning, the middle, the end, how the show is going to be structured, what it's going to be about. And that's the big problem magicians have. They never even think, what is this about? They never even make the first step down the road of, like, I have something to say. They're just doing tricks. They don't care about anything else. And that's why this industrial sameness and the same crass, bad style of magic that's been copied a million times over is pushed magic down into the slums, into the dregs, into the gutter. Garbage begetting garbage in, garbage out, right? I've said on previous podcasts. To pull another Star Wars reference in, you know, where Admiral Akbar says,
it's a trap!
Right, in Return of the Jedi. So, this is the same kind of trap. This requiring a guarantee of success and a guarantee of, like, oh, what's this thing gonna, okay, I'm gonna make it exact, I'm gonna know every little step along the way I have to do. No, you're not serious about creating anything good if that's your approach, and that's what Seth Godin is saying here. So I highly recommend his book, and so that's really all I have to say today. I would highly suggest picking up this book, The Practice, by Seth Godin. Shipping Creative Work is its title. It's got all these little smart tidbits. They may have all come out of his blog or something, I'm not sure. But some really great insight. They reinforce the ideas of the Stephen Pressfield books and other things we've talked about on this podcast. And then don't get scammed, whether through your magic business or in any other capacity. And so I hope you guys are all doing well out there. Maybe some of you are getting back. I see some people are getting back to performing. Some of my street performing friends are slowly performing again. And so, great. Perhaps the world's about to take a turn for the better. There is a Secret Gate podcast, episode 3. If you're listening to this, episode 3 should be out immediately after this. And I will talk actually more about this Seth Godin book in episode 3 of the Secret Gate podcast. If you're a purchaser of my book and you have access to these free extras, these free podcasts I'm making for the Secret Gate, then you can go access those with your password on my website, magicfromwherever.com/secret-gate. You scroll down the page, there's a password protected section where you can get all the freebies, including these podcasts made specially for the Secret Gate purchasers and readers. And in that, episode 3, I will talk more about some of the ideas in this book, The Practice. If you need to reach me, I'm D'Artagnan Magic on all social media and at gmail.com. My website's magicfromwherever.com. If you're not on my email list, go over to magicfromwherever.com/email. If you haven't read my book, it's getting some great reviews from all over the place. Go to the aforementioned URL, magicfromwherever.com/secret-gate. You can purchase it there from Amazon in both ebook and print versions, and on library.com as well. And I'll be back again with another edition of the podcast next week. Until then.